This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
It is Joy. You are on Saturday Magazine Joy 94.9 with Macca and Fiona. Our next guest is Peter Khalil, the member for Wills. And my apologies, Peter, at the end of the last segment, for some reason I forgot where you're the member for, which I really shouldn't because you're actually my local member. So.
I know. Good morning, Macca. Good morning, Fiona.
Good morning,
my
Peter.
And you forgot.
Oh, look, you know, I don't know. We're talking about LGBTQI online hate. So I was probably, I was a bit annoyed.
Well, it's an overwhelming topic.
It is. Peter, a couple of things we wanted to speak with you about.
Sure.
There's been some discussion or the floating of an idea, I don't know where it originated, that the security committee that you chair in the parliament, which if my understanding is correct, is currently has government and opposition members on it. Is that correct?
That's right, yep.
There's an idea, let's call it an idea, that some other members of parliament should be asked or seconded to that committee. And correct me if I'm wrong, the Liberal opposition opposed that whole idea because it would reduce their influence. Is that correct? Is that what they said?
Well, you're partly correct. The first point is this. The Intelligence Security Committee is made up of 11 members,
yeah.
Six from the government members and five non-government members. And the power to appoint any member of parliament from the non-government benches has been there 20 plus years since it was established. In fact, we've had a non-opposition member or sort of an independent on the committee in the past. So that power is still there, has been there. The opposition has tried to politicise the committee by opposing an amendment to increase the size of the committee and the requirements for a minimum from the House and the Senate to make it a bit more flexible as far as composition on that front. And they're playing politics with it. I mean, look, the government we're focused on cost of living relief. We're focused on housing policies. We're focused on climate change. And they're making a big deal about membership of a parliamentary committee. As important as it is, I say that as the chair, but that's their focus.
Well, perhaps the sitting fees are important.
The sitting fees?
There are no sitting fees.
Don't you get an extra fee when you're on a committee?
Not as a member of a committee.
No? Oh. That's a bit of a shame.
Well, you can make a case for it, maybe, for the MPs. I'm sure it'll be pretty popular. But, look, I think the really important thing here is that the committee over the years has been relatively collegiate, works, even though there are disagreements, works towards trying to get the best results on legislation, you know, getting the balance right between civil liberties versus public safety. These are really big questions around legislation and in a really collegiate way. And unfortunately, disappointingly, the opposition has chosen to politicise this by opposing or putting up a dissenting report in the last report that we put out.
So who decides who's on the committee?
The Prime Minister, under the Intelligence Services Act, has the final say in consultation with leaders of the political parties and the Parliament as mm-hmm. a whole. So that is a process that is undertaken to determine which Member of Parliament is chosen on the committee by the PM and in consultation with others.
Now, we recently had Claire O'Neill in the studio with Josh Burns, and we were talking about...
I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, and we were speaking about... Well, we spoke about lots of things, but in particular, I put forward the suggestion that a lot of the right-wing nonsense and agitation that's going on, I actually see it as a threat to our security, not just to my community, but generally. Is this a subject that the Security and Intelligence Committee looks at or can look at? You know, the sort of activities, you know, that we've seen in Melbourne and other places around Australia, is that a subject that the committee has any purview over?
Yes, absolutely, Macca, and I share your and my concern is a deep, deep concern about the rise of right extremism. This is not just happening in Australia. It's happening across democracies around the world. It is really concerning, you know, and so our role is an important one because we do have the opportunity in inquiries to review the legislative framework, the policy framework around dealing with these extremists. So, and I think there is a right-wing extremist or a radicalisation inquiry that may be re-referred to our committee by the Home Affairs Minister. So I'm waiting for her decision on that, because that allows us to look at in depth the policy responses, the public policy, the security and intelligence agencies, but also a whole of government, Amaka, because it's not just, obviously you're seeing these neo-Nazi groups on the rise. What you want to do is try to address this even at the start before people get manipulated, because what they do is they manipulate issues, they target minorities, clearly we've seen that, and they also spread disinformation and misinformation and manipulate particularly younger people, younger males, not just males, but certainly younger people to try and join their groups and to promulgate their abhorrent ideological positions. And you need to address that earlier on. It can't just be a security response. It has to involve, it's got to be part of the education policy. It's got to be part of our social policy. We have to address inequality and economic issues. So I think it's a whole of government effort. And Claire is very, very, Claire O'Neill is very aware of that. There are inquiries and reviews underway around how we do this and how we will deal with this going forward.
Because I mean, you know, in where we live, Peter, in the area that we live, you know, this is you know, a problem. And, you know, something as really as harmless as a drag queen reading a story in a library to kids generates the sort of, frankly, I think it is terrorist activity. And yet, you know, the same people that are demonstrating against that, I never saw them demonstrating outside a Dame Edna show, because after all, Dame Edna, Barry Humphries was a drag queen.
Correct, yes.
Sorry, I was going to say, the neo-Nazi groups are specifically targeting the trans community.
Yes.
They specifically target minorities. They try and manipulate through their misinformation and disinformation and their activities. They whip up their whole play, frankly, is to whip up hatred, ignorance through ignorance, fear, sow discord and division in order to promulgate their abhorrent ideological views. And and those, you would both be aware, from a sort of a fascist perspective, is about the superiority of various races over others and the superiority of certain people over others. That is the abhorrence of that. That was, you know, the totalitarian view of the 20th century that was defeated in World War II. So that's what they do. And we have a really important job, not just the intelligence and security agencies, but the whole of our society, to push back and put into place policies which actually promote acceptance, tolerance, embracing of diversity in all its forms. I mean, you know, they've also targeted ethnic groups and migrant groups. They target Muslim communities. That's what they do. And this is a fight that we're in the midst of right now. And governments play obviously a very important role, but so do individuals. People understand and explaining to their friends and family what is going on here, I think, is a really important aspect of this as well.
Now, Peter, we have had a question from one of our listeners. He wanted us to ask you about the Christian Lives Matter Lebanese group in Sydney. It's an anti-LGBTI group, according to John. There seems to be a connection with the Lebanese community and the World Pride protest that happened in March.
There's some connection. I think it's a pretty slight one, but I've seen, you know, these men gathering, and you know, their mantra is that Christian lives matter. And it's particularly anti-LGBTI, I would say. Most of that group, I think there'd be a great opportunity for a barber there, but because they all look the same. It's interesting, Peter. Do you know anything about them?
I don't know anything about the group that you mentioned. You said it was in Sydney. I mean, I'll look into it, but I don't know about them. What I will say, though, is whatever individual, whatever organisation, of course, there is a right to freedom of expression and free speech.
Of course.
But that cannot be allowed to cross over into hate speech, vilification, you know, and you know, promoting of violence towards minorities as well. That's where our laws, our anti-discrimination laws, our vilification laws are so important, both federal and state. And I think you were talking about some aspects of that in your previous guest. That's really important. And whatever the group is, that is something that I think we're in the midst of now as a society trying to work through. Yes, people are entitled to their views and their opinions and their freedom of expression, but that where does that cross over into hate speech and vilification? That's what we deal with as governments, I think, and parliaments, frankly. My own view on this, having been at the sort of end of discrimination and prejudice and racism, is that people need to understand, too, that words do matter. Words do harm in many respects. And the whole sense of being and belonging is put under question when people attack you, even verbally, because of your identity. And that is a really important point. It affects your mental health. It affects your position, your feeling of belonging or not belonging in a particular community or society. That's a really important point to make, because sometimes people say, oh, just get over it. It's just words. Mm. No, those words actually move on to things like violence and actions, because it actually opens up the door for people to accept that this is, an acceptable view, for example. So we have a lot of work to do, I think, in the education side of things, but also in our laws as well, to make sure we get the balance right.
You know, it's interesting because this is part of it seems like thematically a lot of this is feeding into every single interview that we are doing today. It seems like there is, it's in all of these cases, it is white men, whether it's vilification online in regards to the ABC with Stan Grant and other First Nations and other diverse journalists, whether it be, people that have disabilities that are in the media. I think that why these groups, which of course this is coming from other parts of the world that is infiltrating Australia, and they're using a playbook they're just copying the playbook from similar riots and similar protests in the US and in the in Europe as well. So I mean, why are they so maligned? Why do they feel like they don't have a place, that they have to try and make everyone look and feel and act just like them? I don't quite understand why they seem so marginalized that they're creating such a mess for everybody else.
You've hit on something really important, Fiona, and this is a really important point. Systemic racism or prejudice or bias in society, when you have a group that has been used to having power or the concentration of power in a particular ethnic group or a particular demographic, and you talk about Anglo white males in this context, and that, largely all the CEOs and the leaders and everyone has been from that particular kind of community, if you like. Over the last 10 years, 20 years, really, we've seen that being challenged slowly and incrementally, where people from different backgrounds, different identities, gender, all of it, challenging the power base there that exists. And of course, that's going to cause a reaction. And that's what you're talking about. That's what we're seeing here. An inability to cope with the fact that power is now becoming more shared across communities and that people have a voice. And that's a good thing. Like, I obviously, we all want to have a voice. And we talk about the Indigenous voice as an example. Look at the reaction to that. Look at the reaction from different sectors of the community to giving Indigenous Australians a voice to consult on their lives, on the impact of policies that impact their lives, and look at the visceral reaction from different sectors of the community against that. This has to do with power, Fiona. This is what this is about. And the power is shifting to others, to the other. And this is happening. When I first got into Parliament, I was one of the very few people from I'm a North African background in the Parliament. When I first got a job at SBS, which is a multicultural community that represents, someone very high up said to me, when I got into the executive, I got a job as a director of corporate affairs, someone said, the Egyptian mafia is taking over SBS. And I said, hold on, you've insulted me. You're assuming I'm getting my job not because of my qualifications, but because of my ethnicity. And what kind of mafia actually only gets one or two positions out of 14?
Yes.
The rest were Anglo.
If you were the mafia, you weren't doing it very well.
No. Anyway.
Look, unfortunately, we're out of time, Peter. Look, I thank you, for that chat, and also, that the committee is looking at this sort of extremism, and the extremism exists on the left and the right. So I thank you for that, and good luck if there is going to be some expansion to the committee.
I can think of a couple of the crossbenchers that would really have something to add. Perhaps one of them from Tasmania might be a good idea, but not Bridget Archer, another Tasmanian.
It's all up to the PM.
I know. PM. Well, have a word to him for us. There you go.
Okay.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was
Peter.
Peter Khalil, the member for Wills. Now, just before we go, Paul, I don't know whether, or you, Fiona, did you see on YouTube, and I saw it the other day, Bishop Barron. He's the Bishop of Winona, Rochester in southern Minnesota. And he's done a YouTube video attacking the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, saying it's a Catholic hate group. Now, I'm actually going to agree with him in one part is I don't think, well, agree, it's not a hate group, but it's clear that satire doesn't appeal to Bishop Barron. But perhaps he might like to start a group and call it the Fathers of Institutional Child Abuse. There you go. Mm. Do you reckon he'd do that?
You can only ask Macca.
I think he'd get a lot of members amongst his ministers. There you go. Stay with us.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.